of the chairperson. The committee needs to elect a standing chairperson. So can I call for any nominations? Honourable Harris.
Thank you, Secretary. I'd like to nominate the whip.
Thank you.
I second the motion.
Thank you.
Your attention, please, members. Thank you very much for according me this opportunity to chair this committee in the absence of the chairperson. Without any further ado, let me welcome you on this chilly Tuesday, and I hope members have really taken care of that aspect, countering the coldness. Because we are almost there, it's winter time now. A special word of welcome to committee members, National Treasury delegation led by Ishmael Mohamed, affectionately known as Momo, and welcome also in our midst in the media. Members, we are gathered here today, among other things, to look into three critical bills. These are the bills that, of course, has been introduced to Cabinet, and now they are at a stage where they must be formally introduced to us. Hence, today we have what we term a formal briefing on these bills. The three bills that we will be entertaining today, in the order of the sequence of our agenda, is the raised and mandatory amount and amendment of revenue laws bill. The second bill will be on financial markets. The third bill will be on the credit rating services. In Chalia, members, dealing with this bill, we will be entertaining how the National Treasury intends regulating financial markets, of course, taking the process through Parliament. But also, among other things, we'll also look at how National Treasury intend to regulate fixing of rates of normal tax and amendment of custom and excess tax. And also, among other things, these bills will also provide clarity on registration of credit agencies, the regulation also of certain activities as conducted by these agencies. I hope this is one of the key aspects that we are all looking at amidst the obviously the concern around the unsecured lending patterns that are currently prevalent within our economic system. So I'm definitely sure that these bills will provide, more especially the bill on registration of credit agencies, more clarity around how do we regulate some of the activities of these credit agencies. So without further ado, members, allow me to welcome the National Treasury Delegation and the head of delegation, Momo, to take us through who are here. And as outlined in the program, members, we will, of course, start with the rates and the monetary amounts and amendment of revenue laws bill, and then that will be followed by discussions, and we will check if there's a need for us to take some of these presentations one after the other before discussions. We'll just make a determination as the process flows. Momo, you are welcomed, and I'll give you this opportunity to introduce your team to the city. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and congratulations on your appointment, even if it's temporary. But, Chair, yes, I think, Chair, you know, it's the first time in my entire career in a public service that we've come to do not more than one bill, and not just two, but three today. And I would suggest we do break it in parts. You might be able to merge the other two presentations, but I think if it's okay, let's do the tax one and have the discussion, and then we can perhaps merge the other two, the financial markets and credit rating services bills, if you want to do that for time. Because I think the tax issues are quite specific, and I think just to go, I think by way of background, you know, it's always a debate in the Treasury. How many bills do we have for the tax proposals that we do every year? And it's always our wish that we don't make too many tax proposals, because we like tax policy to be boring. Not too many changes, no sudden changes, so that there's certainty out there. And in fact, to the extent that there are surprises, we only want to give positive surprises if we can help. So nobody complains that they're not being consulted when we lower the tax rates. Of course, if we did it the other way, then people want long consultation processes. But we understand that that's life. And I think that in this year, as you saw, we actually made quite a lot of significant proposals. And I think just to remind ourselves, if we go back to Chapter 4, and I'm doing this because we haven't really had an opportunity to talk to you in any detail about the tax proposals. Of course, there are ways the day after the budget when the minister leads on the budget and you deal with the tax proposals in that way. But, you know, you just kind of go through them very quickly. Today is really the first opportunity where we can talk in greater detail. And as I said, in most years we have one law, one legislative round, and we then call it the tax laws amendment bills. Sometimes we've had two rounds and we call it the second, the revenue laws amendment bills. And this year I think we have called it slightly by different name, the rates and monetary amounts amendment of revenue laws bill, because we try and focus only on the rate changes. The problem, as I say, we have to play is if the tax proposals are too complex and the tax laws amendment bill process actually takes a longer time, then you find that some of these actual rate changes take place quite late. And just to give you an example, when we change the personal income tax margins, when the minister announces it, companies already start implementing it as if the rates will be adopted, so that in all our salary packages the calculations are made what to deduct. So that's already in effect, or takes effect. Of course, were Parliament, say, not to approve those, they would have to reverse all of those in your salaries later down the line. But, Chair, just to remind ourselves then, I think in Chapter 4 of the Budget Review we deal with the revenue proposals for the 2012 budget. And, of course, this year, I think, as far as we're concerned, the tax proposals support a sustained... Oh, I should just add, I have Cecil Morden and Keith Engel with me, who you know. Our colleagues from SARS thought this bill is so short that they don't have to be here because these are just rate changes. I have said I wish they were here. But I'll introduce the team at the back. We have a huge delegation from to deal with the financial markets and credit rating services both. But let me introduce them when we get there, because we also have our colleagues from the Financial Services Board. So I think just to move on to the tax proposals, you know, the proposals largely try to support a sustainable fiscal framework over the medium term and in the process facilitating economic growth and a more competitive economy by putting forward certain incentives in that direction. But I think quite importantly, this year we also introduced a number of proposals. Some of them we did introduce last year as well, to improve the fairness, the equity in the system, ensuring that, for example, income from capital is taxed more appropriately. Obviously, the third objective, which is always there, is just in order to meet South Africa's developmental challenges, we do require sufficient revenue to fund key expenditure priorities. But at the same time, to do this in a way that, you know, we have a sustainable public debt and debt servicing, and not to, on the other hand, overburden taxpayers. So finding the right balance is always difficult. And, of course, ensuring that we preserve tax morality because... essentially, there's efficiency in our expenditure. I think that those are quite important in terms of this compact with society. So, Chair, this bill then only deals with the changes in tax rates and monetary thresholds and some urgent issues, because we amended the capital gains rates, we've had to make some adjustments as well. So we've tried to largely limit it to these measures. I'll ask Cecil and Keith to help me, but just to give you a sense, I think, of our gross tax revenue to GDP, you'll see that, I mean, this trend kind of increased up to, certainly from the early 2000s was increase as a percentage, went up to 27.6, and come the financial crisis, it dropped to 24.8%. And it's not rising very rapidly. What's it this year, Cecil? It's 24.8, yeah. So we're quite far from the limit or the high point that we reached just before the financial crisis. In terms of the three main taxes, which is personal income tax, corporate income tax, and VAT, you'll see the blue line on top gives you as a percentage to GDP the personal income tax ratio, which has been certainly, which reached a high point in the late 90s, then dropped as a percentage of GDP. And then has been just on a mildly increasing trend. In fact, if you look at the table below, or the table that's coming, you'll see that it gets to 8.4% of GDP. Then if you look at the second biggest revenue transaction tax. It's a VAT, the one with the red dots. And that has also kind of been roughly stagnant the last few years, and it sits at around 6.4% of GDP. The third one, which is corporate income tax, is actually the most volatile. Okay, I mean, the first two taxes are relatively stable the last few years. Sure, over a longer period, there might be structural changes, as you see with PIT. But with CIT, or corporate income tax, this has fluctuated quite a lot in the last 20 years. And, in fact, also reached a high point in 2007, when it kind of reached roughly 7.3% in 2006-07, but it's now dropped, it went as high as 7.2%, and currently it's 5.1% after dropping to 4.8%. And this volatility is important because, I mean, as you move into a recession, you, just with a slight lag, you get a lag, but your corporate income tax then starts to fall, and it's still in the recovery phase, as you can see. As you would know, I think the minister did announce on the 1st of April our the revenue collected last year, which was broadly on target, exceeded it slightly, right? So, Chair, I think I think this certainly gives you a good sense of tax revenue. Then, if you look at the next slide, just go back, Cecil. Okay. So, you know, we showed you the first three taxes, but the next important tax, of course, is your fuel levy, and you'll see that that's been pretty static since 2006 and 7. It fell from a high in 1983 of 1.8% of GDP to about 1.2% of GDP. And the other taxes you have, of course, are specific excise and customs duties, and of course STC, the secondary tax on companies, which has now been phased out. But all in all, if you take the tax to GDP, you get your 24.8% in the second last line on the extreme right. And of that, your budget revenue to GDP sits, there's a slight difference there, at 24.6%. If you look in terms of as a portion of total budget revenue, your taxes make up 96%, but your big three taxes make up 80.3%, so they make up almost all of your tax revenue. And again, you can see that your PIT is about a third of all your national revenue, followed by VAT, as I said, which is about a quarter, and companies, which is about a fifth. So, Chair, I think those are just the background numbers in terms of revenue trends. I'll let Cecil maybe take over and just to explain how this year's proposals would change, you know, if all things were equal, how these various changes impact on overall revenue. Cecil.
Thank you, Mamo, and good morning, Chair. Thanks a lot. Slide 8 is a extract from the budget review, Chair, on table 4.4 from the budget review. Just give you a summary of the estimated changes in revenue as a result of the tax changes. Briefly, you'll see the adjustments to personal income tax was about 9.5 billion. The adjustments to monetary thresholds, which is very difficult to estimate, but that was just over a billion loss. And then the increases in the capital gains and dividend tax from the individual side is 800 million and 5.5 billion respectively. When you look at the business tax side, the capital gains there again was 1.2 estimated gain. Then we've got small business relief, and very importantly, the abolishment of the SDC results into a loss of around 7.4 billion. The indirect taxes, fuel levy increase, will estimate an additional 4.5 billion. And then you'll see at the bottom there the increases in tobaccos and the electricity levy, respectively, just under 2 billion rand. The net impact of these changes is a decrease in the revenue of about 2 billion rand. So there was an important adjustment.
I think, Chair, something that you may be interested in looking at some point is you'll see that one of the big deductions right up front are the SAKU payments. It's 42 billion, and it kind of almost doubled compared to last year, if memory serves me right. And that's driven largely that when customs revenue picks up, a lot of that, and a bit on the excise side, that revenue is kind of almost dedicated to the SAKU agreement. And that's what drives that figure. I just thought it would be useful just to take note that it's quite a sizable portion that you have, almost maybe 5%.
Thanks, Mama. Then just to run through the specifics, on this slide you see on the left side is the tax table for the 11-12 tax year, which has just gone by. And on the right side is the adjustments in the brackets that you'll see for the 12-13 tax year, which we are in at the moment. And most of those brackets has been adjusted upwards by just over 6%, 6.3, 6.4%. And also the rebates were adjusted upwards by about 6.3-6.5%. You'll notice right at the end then at the top of, at the bottom of that table that in terms of the income tax, personal income tax, people earning below 63,000 rand taxable income, if you're below the age of 65 will not pay any income tax. If you're 65 and over but below 75, that figure increased to 99,000, and if you're over 75, that figure increased to 110. So we've got pretty high thresholds which exclude quite a large proportion of the working people out of the income tax net. That doesn't mean they don't pay taxes, they don't pay other forms of taxes. And this relief was in above of fiscal drag, so the fiscal drag was estimated to be about 7 billion. The total relief this year is about 9.5, which means there was some real relief provided to individuals. I thought to show you this slide, which also is in the budget review, just to show you an approximation of the number of taxpayers by income group, including the number of taxpayers that fall below the threshold in the 2012-13 year estimates. And you will find that a large proportion of the people in South Africa falls below the threshold. There is also an indication of the taxable income earned, and you'll see the skewness of the income distribution quite very starkly there. But then, very important, our personal income tax is a very progressive income tax system. And if you look at the last line, the second last line, about 2%, 1.7% of taxpayers, those of taxable income, excluding the 4.5 below the threshold, earn about 12.8% of total taxable income, but they contribute something like 24% of the personal income tax. Okay. One of the important reforms that we've made over the past few years was with respect to medical scheme contributions. On this slide, just give you a history of what we started off in 2005-06 and how we have changed the thresholds over time. Initially it was a two-thirds, one-third ratio that we've converted to fixed monetary amounts in 2007, and that monetary amounts we've adjusted over time up to last year. And as from this year, those deductions will be converted into medical tax credits instead of deductions. And the argument for medical tax credits instead of deductions that it is provided a more equitable benefit to all and sundry. There's also the issue of out-of-pocket expenses and contributions above these thresholds that you can claim that as a deduction. And very importantly for people above 65 and people with disabilities, they can still claim all their medical expenses. There's no thresholds for them. There are more reforms envisaged in 2014-15. It's not in this bill, but it's announced in the budget review. So some of these details might change, but these are the envisaged changes that we have penciled in that might happen, so that everybody will be on the credit system and people will be able to deduct additional expenses, and those percentages might change. And that is the proposed ones. The slide was just as a reference point. If you take the 11-12 fiscal year and the deductions, if you convert it into credit at a 30% rate, that credit would have been 132 and 216. And you'll see this year, if you go to the previous slides, we've now upped that to 154 and 230. So that's the reference point, the 132 with the 154 and a 216 with a 230. So that's how we've adjusted it to take account of inflation. And this little table also just gives you the importance of why medical credits provide a more equitable thing. You'll see people that were below the 30% threshold will actually benefit out of this conversion. It's people that are in the 40% bracket that will be slightly worse off. Then one of the very important changes that took effect from the 1st of April this year, this has been announced a few years ago already, was converting the secondary tax on companies into a dividend withholding tax, so that the liability is now on the individual. Very importantly, the second bullet is that certain entities will be tax exempt, so they will not pay any dividend tax, and neither will they pay the SDC, which they previously paid. And so they will be in a better position, like especially the retirement funds and certain public benefit organizations will receive their dividends henceforth tax-free. In making these changes, we had to look at equity and revenue considerations, and therefore there was the proposal to up the rate from 10% to 15%. And you'll notice that even with that change, the net impact is estimated still a loss of close to 2 billion rand for this fiscal year. Just to show you the interaction between the corporate rate and the SDC rate, when SDC was introduced way back in 1993-94, it was introduced based on the premises that we want to reduce the corporate headline rate. It was introduced at 15, it was increased to 25, and then gradually decreased to 10%, and then this year up to 15%, which is now a dividend tax. So that 15% is very reasonable if you compare with where we come from historically. Kate, you want to talk to the slide?
Sure. Steve, sir, now that we've had two changes, we've had one, we've shifted the STC from a company-level dividend tax to a shareholder-level dividend tax. So just shifting the liability has changed. And in addition, we've moved the rate from 10 to 15. And as a result of that, there's a bunch of collateral amendments that are required, some of the anti-avoidance rules, which will then have to fall away. So for example, when we proposed the dividend tax initially in bullet 4, we were going to have a passive holding company regime because there was an arbitrage between the individual and the company rates. The individual being subject to 40, companies being only subject to 30, 28 plus 10. And we were trying to stop that arbitrage, but now that the dividend tax rate has gone up to 15, that passive holding company regime will fall away because the arbitrage between companies and individuals is gone. There's also the gold formula. Now there are two gold formulas.
There is the simple goal formula and the complex goal formula. All I can say is the complex goal formula was based on the old STC, and that's fallen away. And that means a number of gold companies were subject to very high rates. Those rates will now come down, so they're a winner out of that. I got a number of requests on that one. But again, it was based on an STC notion, which is gone. The other one that was important in there is that foreign companies that own South African branches used to be subject to a rate of 33%, and that was to be comparable to the corporate tax rate, which at that time was 28 plus the STC. But now that the STC is gone, that comparability has been changed, and therefore we had to remove the additional higher rate for foreign companies because it would be discriminatory according to the treaties. So there's a number of collateral amendments. Some of these are in this bill. Some of these are going to be in the bill that's coming in a few weeks, because there will be another bill coming which is going to be a lot more technical. The last issue that's there is transitional STC credits. When you're shifting from the STC to the dividend tax, there's going to be a transition period. The old STC had these things called credits, which we will allow to continue into the new system for 3 years. Originally it was proposed 5 years, but the dividends tax is supposed to be enacted 2 years ago. So now we've shortened that period. But some of these will be talked about again, but most of these will be welcomed by the taxpayers. Of course, the shortening of the STC credits, I think most people understood, but they lose a little bit there.
Thanks, Keith. The next change that we've made this year was increases in the capital gains tax. When capital gains was introduced way back in 2001, it was introduced at relatively modest rates, and based on the premises of what we've talked about, equity considerations, the issue of how do you treat capital income, be it interest or dividends or capital gains, there was an argument to increase those rates. And those inclusion rates were up from 25% to 33.3% for individuals, which at the top end, the maximum rate will increase from 10 to 13%. That's just basically 40% times those rates. And in the case of companies and other trusts, those rates, the inclusion rate has been up from 50 to 66.6%. And if you take 66% times 28%, you get the increase from 14 to 18.6%. And in the case of special other trusts, they tax at a flat rate of 40%, and 40% of 66.6 is the 26.7. So what we do with capital gains, the tax is not it's not taxed directly, it's taxed included into your taxable income at a particular inclusion rate, and those are the effective rates that follows from those particular rates. At the same time, there are certain exclusions from capital gains in order to protect people in the middle income category. And those exclusions and relief measures has increased. So your annual capital gains that you make, if it's below 20,000, it wasn't taxed. That is 20,000 is now increased to 30,000. The exclusion upon death has been increased from 200,000 to 300,000 gain. For your primary residence, from 1.5 to 2 million. And for small business, if you dispose the small business, as if you're over the age of 55, which for many small businesses, that's largely their retirement savings, has been increased from 900,000 to 1.8 million. And there's an asset tax that goes with that, which has also been adjusted. So those were the main changes with capital gains. Within the capital gains arena, there is one particular sector that proved to be quite complicated, and some work we're still doing on this. So we will be doing some changes to the taxation of what we call long-term insurance going forward. Just gives you a little bit of a background about the long-term insurance, how they are divided into three funds. And the maximum rate currently on individuals in the individual policyholder is 30%, and that have its effect that the rate there has been adjusted slightly differently. Keith, you want to add to this slide and the next one?
You get there. I think, Chair, this is obviously not a text that we change every year. In fact, we're doing it once after 10 years. And clearly, it's come to the fore in a much bigger way if you follow, for example, the U.S. election. The whole issue of capital gains and how do you tax the very wealthy is because most wealthy people earn don't earn an income. They earn their income through dividends and other forms. They don't earn it, sorry, through a salary and so on. So certainly I think this is an area that has come to the fore, I think, worldwide after the Great Recession after 2008, and as we deal with issues of inequality and so on. But I want to emphasize that the way we've done it, and I think just to get back to the earlier slide before you get to long-term insurance, you know, the exemptions that we have are quite generous. So largely on your house, when you sell it, you know, the exclusion goes from 1.5 to 2 million rands. And I think those sorts of provisions are put there to try and make sure that largely the middle class or the people who have bought a house 20 years ago, when they then sell it, it would have gained value, that those can be locked in without capital gains applying. So I think it's quite important to read that the impact with these exclusions and exemptions that we have. And I think that as Keith and Cecil have started on the long-term insurance, I mean, and that's why some issues we could bring to this bill, but others we've had to make an announcement so that the industry can already begin to implement, even though the legislation will only be covered later in the year. So we're not covering everything on capital gains, but on long-term insurance we've had to put out a guidance note, but Keith can go into those details. And I should add, the thing about these taxes is that if you pre-announce, you're going to get people, you know, who start to act. Even with the dividends tax now, with Cecil, we were just getting this from SARS. You're seeing a number of companies declare dividends before the deadline, so that there's an enormous number of STC revenue coming in because of people trying to avoid paying, well, delay when the dividends tax actually takes effect.
I mean, there's always, look, if you can raise rates, people will act sooner. And just to go back, on the capital gains, I think just to add to Moma's point, is that the capital gains tax is designed to hit your upper income. So in 2001, when we actually enacted the tax, we had a whole bunch of exemptions in there. So 30,000 of capital gains per year is now has been proposed. That takes out the middle class. This is a tax that really is supposed to hit the wealthy, and the wealthy, the idea of here you are a salary worker, you're taxed up to 40%, and you're a wealthy person and you're not taxed very much, is a problem. The difference here is a balance between equity and promoting savings and the issues of inflation. Capital gains does represent an inflationary element, so you can't shoot it up to a 40%, but you've got to balance fairness, and I think and that's important, also issues of savings. So this is not a tax that we change lightly, but again, the middle class is fully outside of this. Back to long-term insurers always cause a problem, because the long-term insurance, as said, is there's a four-fund formula, which is a trustee formula. And under the formula, the trustee, the long-term insurer, is paying the tax on behalf of the policyholders. So it's a complicated thing, but these capital gains charges are really being taxed as trustees for the policyholders. So that's essentially what it's about, and these rates have gone up, and that's all that's being shown in this slide. The issue, turning over to the next slide, is this one here, where one of the issues on capital gains and on your rates is we like to apply your changes for an entire year of assessment. So when you're talking about as an individual, your salary, when we change the rate, it applies to the whole year to keep the calculation simple. And generally when it comes to capital gains, we're simply doing the same thing. So individuals, as a general matter, are subject to the higher capital gain rate since 1 March. Companies will be on their new financial year. The difficulty is long-term insurers represent a combination of people. because the long-term insurance policyholder funds are really representing the policyholders. And the way it works for them is new policyholders are coming in and coming out every day. Even if not only new people are coming in, they're switching investments every day. And one of the problems with having a year of assessment approach was that if you applied that, the people who are holding instruments longer will be taxed for the prior policyholders. It's a fairly complicated formula, but the new entrants would be taxed for what the old people had gained. And so we had to change the nature of the tax to say that only your gain will you be taxed on. And the insurance industry
Can you just repeat that formula?
Okay, now this is fairly complicated stuff in a single slide, and my apologies. I wish it could be simpler. In the four-fund formula, go back one. Let's just go back one. I mean, we're getting a little bit of a bog here. Now, again, a lot of this is in the bill to come, is that if four-fund insurer has four funds, let me slow it down a little. One, they have the shareholder fund, which you don't see there. And then what you have is they're representing policyholders, individuals like yourself. That's fund one. Fund two is representing companies. The third is the retirement funds called the untaxed policyholder fund. The big fund, the one that really matters, is the individual policyholder fund. So you want to take out an endowment policy or an insurance product. You give the money to the insurer. The insurer lets the money grow. Now, as the insurer grows your money, they will tell you you're not taxed. But indeed, you are being taxed, you just don't see it. So what happens is the insurer is taxed on the gains on your policyholder funds, and they pay the tax on your behalf. Now what happens is that there are hundreds of thousands of people making investments every day. So they're constantly switching their investments. Every time they switch investments, sometimes it triggers capital gains, sometimes it doesn't. The way the world works, though, is that generally the system works out equally between the new guys and the old guys, as long as the rate is the same. However, due to a variety of technical reasons, if the rate goes up, as it's gone here, what you'll find is the new people are going to be carrying the rate of the old people, the people who were previously in the investments. And the reason why is it's a complicated thing about a year of assessment approach. And what happened was when we raised the rates, the insurers immediately wanted to say, look, we can't tax the new people for gains that the prior guys had. That's not right. So they immediately went to consult with us, and then the next slide is the proposal that they put forward. And they said, you know, our system of taxing policyholder funds is actually wrong. Even though government only picks up the tax when our investments are sold, we actually have to allocate people's proportional tax on a daily basis. So even though government is getting paid once every 3-4 years for certain funds, the insurers are taking the money out on a daily basis and putting the money aside for the future tax. And they do that to be fair. The problem is they're caught being a trustee holding these large amounts of money. Then they have a whole series of complex calculations to give some of it back and move it around. And what the insurers said is that when you've raised the tax, you've thrown the whole system off. So what they suggested is that we move to basically a daily system of taxation. That if you are, well, it's not a daily system, but to the extent that there's growth, it will be taxed on a regular basis. And that way, the new people will only be taxed on their gains, and the old people will be taxed on their gains. So it is beginning of a fundamental reform in the long-term insurer area. But just to close, look, I don't know if you want to jump in there. I think let me just say this, that there's a number of anomalies that are popping out in the system. And we are working very heavily at reviewing this thing so that we make sure it's a fair and competitive form of investment.
I think just to emphasize, this will still come to you.
Yes.
At the moment, we just had to put certain rules in the interim until the legislation is passed. So we'll be coming to you in detail still on this when we have the tax laws amendment bill stable.
Thanks, Keith and Momo. So these two slides are just flagging to you the issue around the higher capital gains and its impact on long-term insurance, and those amendments is in the next bill, it's not in this bill. But that's important just to show you what is envisaged because it provides a context for the increase. The next amendment, Chair, was for small businesses. Now, as we know that small businesses are important in terms of both providing opportunities for growth, wealth creation and job creation. And we have in the tax system a small business corporation tax regime, which is a staggered income tax treatment. There's no, like the normal companies, there's a flat one. And we've proposed some increases. The next slide put it much nicer. The first threshold, the first amount of, which is taxed at zero, that amount is equal to the tax-free threshold for people under 65. We adjust this annually. And in the middle income bracket is a bracket which we haven't adjusted, the upper portion of the 300,000 at 10%. This year we upped that bracket to 350 and we also reduced the rate to 7%. So there's significant relief for small business corporation in this year's proposal. And then there's two monetary thresholds that we've adjusted. The one is the exemption status of public benefit organizations that provide housing for low-income people. And it's linked to an income per month, and that is determined by the Minister of Human Settlement. And that figure has now been increased from 7,500 to 15,000 per month. And then there is a general deduction in one part of the income tax system, which was 80,000, and that is increased to 100,000. Then, Chair, the fuel taxes, which has been increased by 20 cents per litre and an additional 8 cents per litre for the road accident fund. And this just gives you a picture of what it was 2 years ago, what it was last year, and what it is this year. And you can see, due to the higher prices of fuel, which is determined by largely by the oil price and the rand exchange rate, the tax as a proportion of the fuel price has actually come down. This is a picture of the petrol levy, just a general fuel levy on petrol. In the second column you see how it changes over time. I then converted into real money, which is 2008, and those are the percentages in the last two columns. And to me this slide is an important slide, and you'll see that the blue line shows you the actual fuel levy since 1987, how it increased nominally. The red line shows you the real one if you express it in 2008 money. And so, in real terms, the fuel levy is more or less what it was 20 years ago. So, in real terms, the fuel levy has remained more or less constant. As a matter of fact, it actually decreased for a number of years from 2003 to 2008. And so people have a perception that the fuel tax is so high. If you convert it into real money, fuel tax has actually been very stagnant over this year, past few years, and actually declined. And very important, again, there's some misperception that government gets a very significant amount of revenue out of fuel taxes. It is important. But as a share of budget revenue, fuel taxes has actually declined from 8.5% in the early 90s to 5.5% this year. It was a slight uptick in 2010 due to a higher fuel tax increase. Also, the percentage of GDP, fuel tax revenue, has declined from 1.86% to 1.2%. And the next slide just gives you some figures on fuel sales. I'm not going to spend too much time. But this slide, to me, is important. One of the reasons why you saw the declining revenue share of fuel taxes is because, as an economy, we have become much more fuel efficient. Your fuel use as a percent, as an expression, this is a ratio of GDP is actually declining. And this is a good thing because the economy costs more fuel, but that means the rate of increase in revenue potential is limited, and I think that's an important to take note of. Just very important that both the fuel levy and the electricity levy, it was announced in the budget, but it's not part of this bill. Currently, those changes are done by way of regulation. And I'll just show Momo if you want to make a comment on that later on. But the electricity levy was increased by 1 cent. But very important that 1 cent increase in electricity levy was replaced a built-in surcharge in the ESCOM price or the ESCOM tariff. So we have taken out that built-in surcharge in the ESCOM tariff and make it more explicit and more transparent. So the net impact on the total tariff should be neutral. And then, because excise taxes on tobacco and alcohol are specific taxes, it's a monetary figure, we adjust it annually, and the benchmark there is that the total tax incidence excise plus VAT is 52% in the case of tobacco products. And if you apply that particular ratio, the increase is between 5 and 8% increase for this year. In the case of alcohol beverages, we had a benchmarks of 23, 33 and 43 for wine, beer and spirits. In this year's budget, the wine benchmark has been left unchanged, but that for beer and spirit was increased to 35 and 48%. And these increases will be phased in over 2 years. The resulting increase in excise duties on alcohol and beverage for this year range from 6% to 20%, and the increase will complement broader efforts to reduce alcohol abuse. And this is an extract from the budget review which just shows you the actual increases for the various type of alcoholic beverages, but the previous slide just gives you a broad picture. And that, Chair, is basically the proposals.
Chair, but I think just on the last point, on all the excise and fuel levies, or in short, you know, don't drink, don't smoke, don't emit carbon, don't have sex. No, actually, that's not there. That's the, you know, we catch you for everything. Yes. Now, I think, jokes aside, Chair, I think the issue there is obviously, you know, these come into effect, some of them, like the alcohol and the smoking tax, as soon as the minister announces it, okay, because they're price sensitive, and of course you don't need a Nobel Prize to know that the tax will go up, but the price changes instantaneously, and so they take effect. And I think that the balance for us in the Treasury is that on the other tax proposals, we like to have longer consultative processes. Okay, the other stuff I should say is we're saying don't buy big boats, don't buy certain types of planes. And I think that those are more, they certainly do need better consultative processes. And it's something that we are looking at in the Treasury to improve the quality to the extent, because you can understand that with cigarettes that, you know, there are issues, but not everybody is going to rush out to buy a plane or a big boat. And so we think that it should probably go the more legislative route, but it's something that we're exploring, because I think we're quite committed to having pretty deep consultative processes with tax policy. I should add that two other areas, or several other areas, therefore, just to repeat, are not in this bill. The gambling tax, so don't gamble, okay, that will come to you as a separate piece of legislation. And, of course, the carbon tax, where if you look at the budget review, in annexure, in budget, in Chapter 4 and in the annexure, is it C or D? C. There's a more detailed proposal about how it would actually work. Those are all going to be dealt with, well, that will not even be dealt with in the late legislation this year, because we are still going to produce a second discussion paper based on the proposal that you see here, and only after that will we legislate. But the idea is that it should take effect in 2013. Then I think just some of the other proposals that we have, for example, on retirement reform, we'll be doing later, in fact, even possibly early next year. But we've published on our website a retirement savings document, which the minister released last week, Monday. And it's something that I should just bring to your attention, and I think it's quite important that members actually have a look at that. We've started a consultative process. There are going to be several discussion papers that are going to be released dealing with issues like costs of retirement policies, costs of your retirement annuities, harmonizing the tax treatment of different types of retirement funds that we have. I think that those are pretty important reforms. They're not part of this bill. There's still a consultation process. And in fact, it would be very good, I think, if Parliament, if you invited us to make those proposals, just so that we get a bit more discussion and debate going for those proposals. So I think that, Chair, is really what we wanted to say this time round on the text proposals and what's contained in this bill and what's not contained in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Omonyat and your team. Honourable members, it's, I think it's we are beyond our time with 7 minutes, because it's almost 10:37 now. So it says we are not doing well on that aspect. We will try to increase our speed as we go to the other presentation. Maybe to clear, I know there is a temptation, I mean, to get to the details, because tax, as usual, it's a technical aspect. But I will just warn members that this is what I term the first bite of this committee, as far as this process is concerned. What is going to happen, we will be having public hearings. I will give the details at the end of this meeting. We will be having also a feedback from the public hearings from Treasury. But finally, on our own, after listening to all, we will then robustly deliberate on this particular process. So I will request members to focus on clarity-seeking questions with an understanding that this is a process that is still going to come back to us for robust engagement. So, members, you are more than welcome to pose clarity-seeking questions, and aspects of processes will be, you'll get details at the end of this meeting.
Can I, for clarity, just ask a question? I just want to understand this bill we're dealing now. Are you saying there will be public hearings on this bill? What is Treasury? We don't normally do public hearings on this type of bill. I want to know, because if we don't, then we have to engage you now. So can I just have clarity? I know on the other two bills we will have public hearings, but on this one?
Yeah, if my memory serves me well, when you look into the weekly newspaper, the advertisement that was issued by the chairperson, it clearly indicates that we'll have public hearings for the three bills. I don't know if, are you guys prepared for such, as to clear this one?
Yeah, I think we are prepared for the hearings. So, and we definitely want that once the bills are out public, you know, and I think the period for comment ends this week, Friday, and then as per usual, people could come and make representation. Of course, given that it's rates, I think the Honourable Member, what he's asking is that this, you know, when it comes to rates, you almost have to impose it on people. People can argue, but you can't consult turkeys for breakfast for Christmas too much. We all have to pay our taxes.
Rates, so that usually all the tax lawyers and tax accountants and that whole community, it's not, you're not going to see the same level of comment. It's usually the second stop they all come in.
I think you can see that by the presence here, that you don't see all the tax experts out here. They come for the hard detail in the next bill. But it's still important here to go through the process of hearings and hear people out, whoever wants to come.
Okay, Member Sidan says what I said earlier on stands. No robust deliberations, because we still have some process that we have to go through that will give us ample time to robustly dissect this bill. So, clarity-seeking question, members. I have noted Honourable Mteto, Honourable Harris, Honourable... I'll start with the whole of our first row MPs, and then from the Honourable Luyenge, followed by Honourable Chabarala, and Honourable Dugazana will then close this particular process. Thank you. In that sequence.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to see, I was looking at your slide number 29, where it indicates the fuel levy percentage of budget revenue. Where is the actual money goes to? Because I've noticed there you put on slide 27, you put the actual rent. But currently you notice that it went up to 8.5. Now it has dropped to 5.0. When the actual price outside there in the market is higher than the previous year, what exactly is happening here? Can it be explained in terms of where is the other balance it goes to? If it was 8.5 in 1994, now when you look at 2011, 2012, it's 5.5, there's a drop. But on the actual rent outside, people are paying higher petrol. Where is this subsidy going?
You know the questions, Momo, when you achieve. Members, you can proceed asking questions.
Thanks, Chair. I have five questions, but I'll keep them very, very short. The first one is, every year we talk about how South Africans aren't saving enough. And every year we tinker with the budget, but I would suggest that maybe it's time to tackle that head on with wholesale reform. I mean, why can't we be much more aggressive with tax exemptions for savings. I think if I'm looking for one thing in next year's budget, that's it. Let's tackle this problem once and for all and use the tax system to do it. Secondly, Chair, when we had hearings on the budget, we had representations from concerned individuals who pointed out that Income Tax Act sets the dividend tax rate at 10%. And that's a law that's in place currently, yet 15% was announced. So you have a disconnect between what's written in the law of the land and what's announced in the budget. There was some concern about the legality of that, actually, that 15% rate. I'd like clarity on that. Thirdly, Chair, overall, we heard in those very hearings that I think 4.5% of taxpayers pay 38% of the revenue. Now, that raises a question for me, Chair, about the fragility of our revenue base. It's one thing saying, you know, high-income earners can afford if we shift the tax burden onto them, but that doesn't recognize the fact that those people are generally quite internationally mobile and are comparing their tax bill to comparatively to other markets. In general, I accept the approach the Treasury and SARS have taken over the last few years, but my concern is that we're getting to a point, Chair, where when you look at what SARS is considering in terms of carbon tax proposals, tax proposals to fund NHI, perhaps a local business tax, we start to get to the point where business owners and high-income individuals are probably going to be overtaxed relative to other markets where they could move to relatively easily. That's a big warning sign for me, in especially what SARS is announcing coming down the line. Then, second to last question, Chair, is the fuel levy. These numbers are really great. How do they compare to international benchmarks? I mean, are we taxing more or less? Are we imposing higher or lower taxes on fuel than comparable economies? And lastly, the proposal around tax incentives for the special economic zones. I was in a DTI meeting where the department said that the Treasury was considering what they called souped up 12i incentives, referring to the Income Tax Act. If that's the case, I mean, my first question is that the case? Secondly, that seems very weak to me relative to what other zones around the world are offering. In fact, it's not even close to competitive. Do we not need to get far more aggressive on the tax incentives for those zones, otherwise see them go down the kind of same wishy-washy, partially effective route that the IDZs have gone down? Thank you, Chair.
Members, I'm definitely sure that our officials here do have detailed responses on all taxation aspects. And obviously, temptation will always be there to ask tax matters broadly. I will once more request that we focus on the presentation. Clarity-seeking questions, and as we deliberate, because we still have time to deliberate on, then we can bring other issues as considered from outside. You know, so please, let's adhere to that directive.
So, Chair, I will stick to that. Just on slide 20, where you announce this capital gains tax for long-term insurers, it's not part of this bill, but I just want for clarity. Was it announced in the budget by the Minister? If not, is this an attempt not to surprise us later and a PR exercise?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on the capital gains tax, which relates to long-term insurance. Chair, what I want to check is whether the said tax is actually affecting the maturity values of policies, or it refers to all the payouts that are being made, including the pension payouts. You have said retirement annuities are not untaxable, but in relation to a pension payout, is it taxable? Then lastly, Chair, is on the small business tax. Does it generally refer to also personal tax income of up to the 300,000? The 10% that is actually taxed, is it applicable to up to 300,000 or from 300,000 upwards? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Without wanting to discuss the rates, rather debate around taxes, mine is on the, I'm not sure whether, I want to confine myself to clarity without discussing, but I think it's on the dividend, the issue of dividends. I just wanted to find out what has been, because we've mentioned that from the 1st of April there's been implementation of the 15%. So I wanted to find out the compliance, but we did note that there's already, you know, people declaring dividends. But also around the issue of collection to our revenue, what has been probably the outcome of that. But lastly on that, on the clarity is that, you know, when you move from the higher rate, it helps to mitigate some revenue losses. So I would want to find out what would be the percentage of that revenue loss compared to what we're also getting. What is generally been the experience around the issues of the cost, getting to the experience or rather the exercise. Just the last one, you speak about slide 35 on the electricity levy. It says the net, just the last bulletin, the net impact on electricity tariffs should be neutral. So I would want to find out, you're saying it should be neutral. What is the status quo now around the issue of the levy on the electricity? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, firstly, I would like to understand if all the tax proposals are included in this
new titles, because I realized that they're not. And was that done deliberately, because it was going to help us actually go through and follow them? But going to part one of the ninth schedule, where you talk about the development and the construction, I'm sure you understand what I'm talking about, and you propose that from 7.5 to 15,000. Now, my concern there is the rest would be determined by the minister. I don't want to accept, because I'm sure you understand what I'm talking about. So my concern, Okay. So now my main worry is that the majority of the public servants, they are far from that, from 7.5, even 15,000 is even worse. So are we keep on excluding the teachers and the nurses who are getting far less than this? The amount proposed, really, it makes me, I don't know about the other members of the committee, but it makes me very worried, because it means we are keeping on excluding the majority of the public workers, which are the teachers, the police, and the nurses. And then going to the section 23H, where you said, where the aggregate of all amounts of expenditure, it's because in your presentation it was not quite clear. Are you saying we must shift from 80,000 to 100,000? Is this what you're proposing? Last chair. Your first page is of the presentation, estimated revenue impact. You look at the tax revenue of 8.826 billion. That is after tax proposal. And the budget revenue after tax proposal being 904 billion. Where do you get the 78 billion? Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you very much. It's almost 11 o'clock. I simply say we are 30 minutes out of schedule. So please help us, I mean, to do better, you know. Okay, thank you.
Chair, we'll go through this pretty quickly. I think just in terms of the first question on the fuel levy, what we show is that it drops as a percentage of total revenue. And I think importantly, you know, because it can drop because other taxes have increased, or it can drop because it has not grown as rapidly as the economy. But it's important to look at the... It has also dropped in terms of GDP. So you can see it's a drop. Now, there can be a number of reasons for that. Certainly, in South Africa, the size of the tax that we have is small compared to Europe. If you go to Europe, it will be, I don't know offhand, but it will be 5 or 7 rands more per liter because of the tax. On the other hand, if you go to the US, you have no tax and it's cheap. And in fact, that's probably the problem, that you have overconsumption of fuel, leads to price increases, there's environmental impacts here, and that's a problem. And in fact, in some Asian and Latin American economies, there even used to be a fuel subsidy. Many countries have removed that, okay? So, you know, given that there isn't enough oil, it's quite important to have a tax for environmental reasons, for revenue reasons, etc. And I think just to clear the issue as well, this goes generally into general revenue. So that's where it goes, except for a small component which goes to the Road Accidents Fund, which is earmarked or ring-fence. I would say it's a good example of why you shouldn't ring-fence, but that's my own view. But I don't know if you want to add this on the fuel levy issue.
This is the point we'd like to make. You know, if you look at the blue line, the nominal fuel tax has increased, and increased quite steeper during the last 4 years than previously. What we show you with the real line is that in real terms, remember GDP is expressed in real terms, that tax has been flat. So those people perceive they've paid more, if you convert it into real money, it wasn't much of an increase. It's actually fact it has decreased for a number of years. That's one of the reasons. The other important reason is this slide, which I show you right at the end. Because the economy becomes more fuel efficient, and that's a good thing, as you say, people get more mileage, new technology, the volume of fuel that is consumed as a ratio has declined. And so that results into this picture, which shows you that fuel taxes is not a buoyant source of revenue, because as fuel consumption flattens, the revenue you get out of it goes down.
There's a shift.
That's the one end. The other story is that some of the other taxes might have increased at a faster rate. They might buoyant. So there are basically two forces here that shows you, whilst tax from fuel is important, it's not a buoyant revenue source. And so you, if you get into earmark it, you box yourself into a corner that you get less revenue and you want to fund a expenditure that might increase very fast. And I think it's important to understand this when people talk about earmarking. You box yourself into a tight corner here. And just to, lastly, on the fuel tax, which was the next question was asked, Mr. Harris, is that you see our estimated fuel tax as a percentage of the retail price is about 27% on slide 26. In Europe, it's close to 50%, if not more. In America, it's probably 10%. We sit sort of more or less in the middle. We are on par with many Latin American countries and some Asian countries. So our tax rate as a proportion of total fuel prices is more or less in the middle if you compare it with other countries.
Okay, and then just to move on the questions on savings, I think I won't deal with that now, but I think we agree with you we need a more aggressive approach, and that's precisely why we released a document last week which gives an overview. We also talk about introducing certain tax incentivized savings products, but I won't deal with them now, just in the interest of time. But it is there, and Chair, I think it would be really good to have a discussion around it. Just with regard to the taxation of savings, there's various differences. Some savings, for some of your retirement products, you know, when you contribute towards the pension fund, etc., you get a tax deduction. Then for some, the growth also is not taxed. And if you see from the dividends tax as well, your retirement savings actually aren't taxed. And at the point at which you pay out, there may or may not be a form of taxation, depending on the type you have and what happened earlier. Again, that's an issue I think we can deal with, and is one of the big issues of harmonizing the treatment of taxation on different savings products, which we announced last week. And I'll ask Cindy, in fact, to circulate the paper, I think, to members, and we can see how we can take that forward. With regard to the dividends income tax, yes, last year we legislated it. This year we're just announcing an increase. So, yes, it's even the personal income tax, the rates that apply are last year's rates until you pass this bill. But, you know, everybody moves to implement it beforehand in anticipation that that's going to happen. Similarly with the dividends tax, we've increased the rate. This bill will give it legal effect. If Parliament turns it down, then people will just, pay. I mean, in anticipation, they pay the 15%, but it only becomes law when the bill is passed. And if you don't pass the rule, as is the right of Parliament, then you have to pay back to people who have paid, okay, the extra 5%. Okay. So I think that's the legality of the issue. I think, was there any other question on, yes, on a dividends tax, I think the question on collection and so on, do you want to just answer those?
Collection, okay.
Oh, will you deal with that?
Maybe. Put it in a sequence that it's the questions.
Yeah.
Okay, you want me to deal with the dividends when finished?
Okay, and deal with any other
questions
so we can rush it.
I'll try to speak. The dividend tax, if I understand the question correct from the Honorable Shabalala, is that it came into effect on the 1st of April, the changeover. It's higher than that. The revenue we saw for the first month was quite high, and that is people have declared a lot of dividends in the build-up to that, and that's expected. And so you'll find that during April, we collected something like 8 billion rand in STC, which was a flow over from what we are, where we normally collect something like 2 billion rand per month. So for the rest of the year, we're probably not going to collect a lot, but it will wash out. So we anticipated that, not as drastically as we saw in April, but you know, that's the way people work, and there's nothing wrong with it. The net loss, as you see on the one slide, which is on slide, the last bullet. The changeover, despite the increase in the rate, we still expect a loss of about 2 billion. And one of the main reasons for that loss is that pension funds will receive their dividends tax-free. And it's quite a significant portion of dividends that are paid to pension funds, and they get it tax-free. And there's a few other exemptions, and also the treaties provide for lower rates. But these are the estimates. It's very hard to pin down the numbers. But thanks for that question, a very good question. Just to deal with some of the others, the special economic zones, we are in discussion with the DTI. In the budget review, we flagged three possible options, if you go to that. And that we will only be able to come back to the committee next year. It's not in this year's bills. None of the bills deals with that. The minister will make, hopefully, an announcement in the budget of 2013. And it's going to be probably a little bit more generous than what you've heard from the DTI. The slide 20, the issue on CGT and long-term insurance. Keith, you want to talk about that? That's implicit. It's been announced. The only thing that we are talking about is implementation and design.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point, can I say, which we then consult with the industry, people give comments, clearly that was a specific issue that needed to be dealt with more urgently in our discussions with the industry. Hence, we put out a guide before the legislation goes through. Do you want to say?
Right. As I said, we announced that the rates were going to increase. The only issue is timing. And it was really the insurers that all came forward and said, we don't want you to make this a year of assessment approach. We want to make this clear a one March approach. And they were uncertain what to do. And then in our discussions with the industry, they said, you know something, there's a better way to tax capital gains here that's going to be far more efficient and far cheaper to administer. So we basically, this was a compromise with the industry. It was actually someone on their insistence. So it was a little different than expected. The rate was going to increase, but the nature of taxation changed based on their insistence. But there is another bill that's coming, and that is there are changes going on with the financial sector where we're going to be taxing it more in line with accounting and more on a mark-to-market approach, which we will discuss next time, and this becomes in line with that. So it was within the scope, but this is not something being imposed on the industry. It's actually being requested. Just to go back on the dividend tax, one more point here, and I think that's what Momo was trying to say, is that every year we do a rate adjustment, and those rate adjustments have been coming down. That is announced from the day of the minister, and that's something that's very important. If you want to have an economic stimulus, the minister can announce, and we can stimulate the economy almost immediately as of 1 March. So when you see all the rate adjustments, they're driven by ministerial announcement with parliamentary post-ratification. One of the purposes of this bill before you is trying to accelerate that parliamentary entry into the process. We had actually hoped to have this bill before you in March, and indeed it was ready at the end of February. But if we want to do better on these issues, we should actually have a rates and thresholds bill before you and commented in March. The parliamentary schedule didn't allow it. So I would encourage that, and I think that would shore these issues up. Then there was just one final issue, which was on the pension point that you were asking. Pensions are not taxed on the buildup. So pensions are not affected by this proposal. All the growth is tax-free. There are no capital gain. The point you're raising is when the money comes out of the pension, then there's this lump sum formula and there's income. At that point, it's ordinary revenue, and a lot of it in the lump sum comes out in the formula, which gives you that $300,000 or plus exemption, or it comes out in annuity, which is taxed annually. But none of that is affected by this proposal here. That just stays the same as before.
I think just to conclude, I'm going to ask Cecil to come in, but to answer your question, honourable member, not all the proposals are in this bill. We said that there are other, the tax laws amendment bills will carry most of it. There'll be a dedicated gambling bill, etc. Cecil, I don't know if you can just answer the question on the small business, the housing and PBO, and just the tax revenue, the non-tax revenue difference that comes.
Just a last comment on the long-term insurance, and one of the points that people are misunderstood. When you buy a policy that is not a pension fund, you're always told that you get the money tax-free out. That's true. But the build-up is taxed. And so it's important that you have a good picture about when you talk about a policy. On small business, let me just go to that slide. Sorry, I've gone in the wrong direction. The small business regime looks like that. And this is for small business companies. You must be a company, either a CC or a PTY Limited, to qualify for this regime. Individuals doesn't qualify for that. Individuals are taxed as per the individual threshold on the earlier slide. The first bracket, we tried to bring it in line with the tax threshold for individuals, but the second threshold has got nothing to do with individuals. These are for small business corporations. So if you're a small business and you're unincorporated, you don't qualify for this. You are taxed as an individual. On the electricity levy, yes, the net impact would have been and is that it will not result in an increase because there was a built-in charge for in the Eskom tariffs. And what we have done and proposed is that we convert this into an explicit levy. There was a small marginal change, but in our discussion, we got an assurance that the tariff this year will not be adjusted to account for that. On the housing, this increase in this monthly income is really a human settlement criteria. So the Department of Human Settlement determine the grant system is linked to income. The housing allowances or the housing subsidy is linked to income. And previously the threshold was 7.5, now it's 15. We just have a provision in the Income Tax Act that provides tax exemption for PBOs operating in this market, and therefore it's just a link. So this is nothing to do with thresholds that we're setting. What we are working on, and which is announced in the budget review, is some incentive for developers to provide housing in the gap market on the supply side. We had a meeting with the Human Settlement a week ago. We're working on that proposal, and that also will come to this committee next year. It's not this year. It's just a lot of more work that we're looking at. And that will deal with people in that gap market that can't afford an expensive loan, but they fall outside of the RDP houses. So people talk about the gap market. There are a demand-side assistance that the human settlement manage, but the problem, there is not sufficient houses on the market in that category. And therefore, we're looking at that. And the 8,500,000, you want to talk about this 80,000?
Oh, yeah, this is more of a technical rule. if you make an upfront payment and you pay for, say, a rent, and you make it, it's a 10-year rental agreement, and you pay for the money up front, what you're supposed to do is you get your deduction in line with accrual, which means you spread your deduction over a number of years. So it's about spreading business expense deductions in line with the economic benefit. But it's complicated to do that. So 23H says you don't have to spread if it's small, which is currently $80,000, but the small now will become $100,000. So it's more of a business spreading rule. That's all that is. That really won't affect individuals very much.
I think the last question, did you have any?
Yeah, there was the last question on the numbers. I didn't get the question. So here's the slide. If honourable member can just repeat the question.
No, the question was, what's the difference between the tax revenue and the non, the general revenue? There's a lot of non-tax revenue that comes. The royalty would be part of it, or the departmental proceeds.
Yeah. If you look at the budget, there are two figures which sometimes can confuse you. You talk about tax revenue, and you talk about broad budget. What we have got in the 904 figure includes things like revenues by state-owned entities. I think provinces are included there. So, yeah, there's a bit more with it. It's not really taxes, and we don't talk too much about it, but it is there.
I think the last issue was who pays the taxes at the top end, 30%+. I think in the middle end, you'll see it's 32% as well. So the middle class also pays quite a sizable amount. I think the issue of how much tax have we reached limits, etc., it really depends on the expenditure side and what benefits you have. So on the tax side, we always postpone that to say, let's look at expenditure efficiency and what people feel, what value they're getting out of the money that they pay for taxes. But, Chair, I think we've answered all the questions.
Thank you very much. Members, I'm not going to take any follow-up question, but please feel free to engage with the officials who are here, more especially during break time, just to clear some of the areas that you want to clear. But as I said, we will be having public hearings next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, and that will be followed by feedback by SARS on the said hearings. And finally, we'll have our committee deliberation on these bills. Thank you very much, Mr. Monyat, and your team. I think your attempt to ensure that we, as a country, we remain with our optimal tax, or maybe our tax system remain optimal, is clearly evident in this particular, without getting into details. But from where I am, I think you are trying to outline how our system is responding to issues of equity, issues of simplicity, which is a tall order, but also, how do we deal with issues of income, a fair income distribution, which is a challenge that as the world we are grappling with in as far as taxation systems are concerned. Thank you very much, and we hope to meet you very soon. Members, let's just have a 5 minutes leg stretch break, and we will then continue with the two presentations. Please prepare that we have the two presentations done back on back, please. Thank you very much.